Introducing the new low-fat Subway Buffalo Chicken. Spicy chicken, cool light ranch, one hot sandwich. All the flavor you love with 7 grams of fat. For a limited time, hurry to Subway and enjoy the newest part of a Subway Fresh Fit meal. The BS Report is a free-flowing conversation that occasionally touches on mature subjects.
First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. He must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
Welcome to BS Report Special Baseball Playoffs Edition. We're recording this on a Monday, and it's running on a Wednesday, unfortunately. But that's the way we had to do it for a variety of reasons. Sean Casey from the MLB Network will be on for the first 40 minutes, and then Jacko at the 40-minute mark. Our friend the Yankee fan, diehard, we've been going back and forth all season. Now it's here. It's money time. So we'll have him on then. But first, the mayor of the BS Report from the MLB Network on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline, Mr. Sean Casey. What's happening?
Hey, what's up, brother? How you doing?
Now, how excited are we for these playoffs? Because the September stretch run was not nearly as exciting as it usually is, don't you think?
It wasn't as exciting. I think this whole, with the Tigers and the Twins coming down the stretch was pretty awesome. That was pretty impressive. But yeah, the stretch run wasn't as exciting as in years past, no doubt about it.
Yeah, there was, I don't know what was going on this year, but for instance, the Red Sox Yankees, after the Yankees won that 15 inning game in Yankee Stadium, which I think was almost like 2 months ago, but you just kind of got the feeling from that night on, all right, the Yankees are going to win the division. Red Sox are going to probably be the wild card unless they completely collapse, and that's how that'll play out. Then the Angels, you knew they were going to lock up that division. Got the feeling the Dodgers, Phillies, Cardinals in some order. It was strange. Really the only thing that happened on the last couple weeks was that two teams almost completely collapsed. And we're taping this on a Monday, but the Tigers might still be finishing that collapse. Have you ever played on a team that just where it fell apart like that in the last 10 days of the season?
Oh, man, you're bringing back bad memories, bro. When I was on the 99, when I was on the Reds, we won 96 games, and I believe we had a two-game lead on the Mets going into the last weekend for the wild card. I think we were one up on the Astros going into Milwaukee. We had to win, two out of three, and it was ours. The division was ours. And then we had to win one, and the Mets had to lose one, and we were in. And the worst thing that could happen was we lost the first two and the Mets swept. Well, everything happened. That thing happened. The Mets beat the Pirates, I believe, and swept. We lost the first two at Milwaukee. We were up 3-1 the first night, and we ended up losing 4-3 or 5-3 in the ninth or something. So we had went into the last day of the year. The Mets are in. We have to win on the last day of the year in Milwaukee, and it was a 9-hour rain delay. Literally, we didn't start the game, I think, till 9:30 or 10 o'clock that night. We had to play it. We're in Milwaukee. There's just 19 people are in the stands. They've been tailgating all day long. You can hear everything they're saying. And we end up winning that game, and we play a one-game playoff against Al Leiter and the Mets the next day in Cincinnati. 50,000 walk-up fans, sold out in an hour. Place going crazy, and Al Leiter throws a two-hit shutout, and we're ousted. So, those one-game playoffs and blowing it in the last three games of the year were not some good memories for me.
I vaguely remember watching that two-hitter. And vaguely remember that whole collapse because it's year after year after year. It gets hard to keep track after a while. But that 99 Reds team, could you feel it? Can tension just affect every single guy on the team and make everybody tight?
Oh, well, you know what? I don't know. It was it was such an humble year for us because we weren't supposed to do anything. And here we were, Mike Cameron's in center field, Ron Ballone's having an unbelievable year, Pete Harness, Denny Nagel, Steve Perry. We just put it all together. We had some great players on the team, and it was just unbelievable how towards the end, I don't know if we got tight or what happened those last 3 days. Just we almost felt like we were trying to hold on instead of going to get it, and we just could not, we just couldn't figure it out those last couple of days. It was so frustrating. Still is to this day. I when I see Al Leiter in the studio, I still want to beat him up.
You should charge him. Charge the mound on him once.
Oh, I'm good. I believe one of these nights you're going to see me come out of into the studio, close on Al Leiter. They're going to have to go to break.
What's the weird thing about baseball, though, is that you can watch a team one night and think, They're done. That's it. It's over. Like, I watched the Tigers on Saturday night, which was actually Saturday afternoon in the West Coast. But I'm watching just the body language and the way the fans were reacting, and it just seemed like, oh, my God, this team, this is one of the biggest claps. And then they come back the next day and they win. Like, you just never know. Yeah, day to day.
You do never know. You do start feeling that, though. Like, you can see a team's body language, and they're like, oh, man. But I think the great thing about the postseason, though, is when that however streaky you were, how good or bad you were towards the end of the year, it doesn't matter. You just got to get in. And once you get in, anything can happen.
So going into October, is there a team that you feel like that team's hot, that team's cresting at the right time?
Well, you know, I look at the Angels. I think they're. It's going to be interesting to see if they can get past Boston the first round. They keep getting matched up with Boston. And I remember being on Boston last year, and Jed Lowry gets that big hit, and they win it. We win it again in four, and the year before, and the year before that. So, I mean, I'd like to see. I think the Angels are going to have a little different say this year with that lineup they have out there, and you know, Lackey at the top of that rotation. I think Kazmir's pitched pretty well for them as far as. You know, having him in the three hole. So, I like the Angels. You know, in that first round against Boston, like to come out and play some good baseball. I don't know if they're necessarily going to beat Boston because, you know, having to face Lester and Beck at the top of that rotation is going to be a pretty tall task again. But I don't know. I think the Yankees, man, they look like a good club this year. It looks like, you know, they're really gonna do some stuff. And also, you go back to the National League when you look at Carpenter and Wainwright at the top of that rotation. I mean, it's going to be an interesting playoff. You look at all these teams, they all have great top of the rotation, two pretty legit starters at the top of the rotation.
So you don't think that there is a consensus kick-ass team this year?
I don't think so. I don't think so. I mean, you could say the Yankees, hey, they've had such a great regular season. They've done all the things they've done, but I still think they're a very beatable team. I don't think there's one team that really stands out. I mean, the Phillies don't stand out. The Rockies, man, I think it's going to be whoever, you know, I think pitches the best. I mean, obviously, that's pretty obvious. But whoever comes out and can get those starters, especially in a five-game series in that first round, get those guys going. I think those are going to be the teams that just take off.
And it seems like that we're at a stage now where you just need to get hot for 10 days, basically.
That's all you got to do. You just got to get hot. I remember when I was with Detroit in 06, we needed to win one game. Same thing. We needed to win one game in the final series against the Royals. One game. We win the division. We lose the first two. Then we lose the last game. The Twins end up winning. And now we have to play the Yankees because we win the wild card in the first round. I remember Jim Leland kind of pulling us together like a Vince Lombardi moment. You know, we get out of the first workout. He gets us all together. He's like, we're the best team in the playoffs. I don't care what happened the last three games. I'm proud of you guys for what you did. We're going to beat the Yankees, and we're going to beat whoever's next. We're going to get to the World Series. And it was one of those things where we really limped into the playoffs, and then we ended up going 7-1. You know, we ended up taking three or four from the Yankees and then sweeping through Oakland to get to the World Series. So you never know.
You want to get hot for the last 10 days, not the first 10 days of the playoffs. Because, like, the 04 Red Sox, they finished it out going 8-0. The 07 Red Sox, they finished it out going 7-0. But you don't want to, like, you guys went 7-1 in 06, but then you still had to play the World Series.
Exactly. And then we had those 8 days off, and we got, you know, we ended up getting boat raced by the Cardinals. But, yeah, you're right. You want to play good baseball at the beginning, and then you just want to keep carrying through and carrying that momentum, like you said, when the Sox just rolled on through.
Are you happy with the current playoff setup? Because I am not. I feel like I have a couple of thoughts here. I'm going to throw these at you. First of all, If the wild card, there's really not that much of a penalty if you get the wild card. You still get two games at home. The last game in the first series is on the road. But baseball is not the most impossible sport to win a deciding game on the road. Now, why wouldn't they set it up so that the first seed gets all five home games in the first round? Seriously, why shouldn't there be some sort of reward? I am the first seed in my league. You're the fourth seed. You barely made the playoffs. You couldn't win a division. So come here and win three games for me on my turf. Would that work?
That's not going to work.
Why? Why doesn't that work?
That's not going to work.
Why not?
You can't do it. What if you look at sometimes the wild card teams are better than some of the division leader teams? I mean, what? Just because they won a division that in a bad division, the wild card should get penalized? I think... You can't do it.
Well, but we need something that makes these September games matter if all the playoff spots are basically set. The Red Sox had nothing to play for, basically, from mid-August on, other than to make sure they didn't completely collapse. That was really their only goal. Didn't really matter. You know, the last 3 weeks of the season didn't really matter what happened. They were in the playoffs.
Yeah,
you know?
They were in.
Well, what about this? Okay, so the number one seed and the wild card, if there's more than a 10-win differential between the two teams, then it's four home games and one home game for the wild card. If it goes to 15 or more, all five for the one seed. Too complicated?
No, I still don't like it.
Come on.
I still don't like it.
All right, what about this?
Hey, 3-2.
What about this?
It's still good.
So we seed it by the four teams, but we do it by win total. So the three division winners and the wild card make it.
Okay.
But if the wild card is the second most wins, they're the two seed.
I don't mind that. I don't mind that. I really don't.
All right. Now, what about
the
Gammons?
That's a good idea. You're 1-3 in my book.
I'm 1-3. Okay. Now, here's the Gammons idea.
All right.
We add a fifth playoff team, a wild card team. The two wild card teams do a best 2 out of 3 series before the DSs. The winner of those wild card series goes on and they play the number one seed. But at the very least, the wild card teams are now not allowed to set their rotations and do all the things they need to do to compete in round one. It's a little bit of a hindrance.
So they don't have their big guns going in the first round kind of thing?
Yeah. Like, it's a little bit of a penalty. You couldn't win your division. Here's your slight, tiny penalty. You cannot set your rotations. You actually have to pitch your number one starter before the series starts.
I can see that. That's not necessarily that bad of an idea. And you add another wild card team, and then you try and have them play off to get in. That's not. You're right. That takes away a little bit of. It makes it a lot tougher road to win it.
All right, last one. So we have 10 playoff teams. We add a second wild card. We do the best of fives. The number one seed sits out, gets a bye for round one. Then round two, we go to what's the DS format now or whatever, and it goes from there.
Too many teams. Yeah, I think.
Oh, actually, that wouldn't work. I screwed up the math on that one.
You'd have 9 then, right?
I guess the two wild card teams would then play a best 3 of 5. Eh, I screwed that up. Forget that one. Scratch that one.
Let's throw that one out the window.
Scratch that one. I had a lot of alcohol abuse in college, killed my brain cells. There was some sort of idea that worked there, but I can't remember where the one seat got the buyout way through. So you're happy with this playoff setup that basically there's no urgency whatsoever other than to make the playoffs?
Well, I don't know. Like, I think the one thing that, as far as getting into the playoffs and the playoff setup, you know, I think sometimes the best of five series in that first round, you know, you talk about the wild card, you know, having an advantage. Well, if that wild card team has two really legit starters and, you know, over a 162 game, obviously you're relying on your 3, 4, 5 starters more, then sometimes I feel like the best of five series, you know, there's no, you can just sneak by a team maybe you weren't supposed to beat, but you can win it because it's just, you know, you got hot for a couple of days. I think I wouldn't mind seeing that first round maybe be a best of 7.
Oh, man, you just want the playoffs to go on forever. Don't they have to cut the regular season then to 154 games if they do that? I feel like they do.
Yeah, well, I think every player would love that. They would love to go to 154.
Well, the argument for not cutting back would be that the alleged records would be affected. But after what happened the last 2 decades, can we even say that there's a record that... I mean, seriously, somebody's going to break 73 home runs? I don't think that's happening.
No, I don't think so. You're never going to do that again.
Or 190 RBI or whatever the Hack Wilson mark was. I don't think any of that stuff's going to happen. I forgot to throw one idea. This is actually my favorite. I can't believe I forgot to put this in the top five. And I've suggested this for the NBA playoffs, and I think it would kill. So, the number one seed clinches in each league. They get to pick which of the other three teams they want to play. They call out the team. They say, like the Yankees, number one seed in the American League. They say, you know what? We want the Tigers. We're going to play the Tigers in round one. The number two seed and whoever is left, they end up playing the other series. Adds a little drama, though. The worst team gets called out by the one seed.
I don't mind that. That's not a bad thing. I think that gives the number one seed a chance to say, all right, we're going to play you guys.
Right. Well, like imagine the 06 Tigers. You guys make the playoffs, and then the one seed that they're the Yanks say, we want the Tigers. That's the team we think we can beat. That gets you guys fired up, right?
I was going to say, there's added motivation right there. You call us out. We love coming in to try and beat the big bad Yankees if they're going to call us out that way.
Yeah. See, God forbid they came up with any ideas to make baseball more exciting. I mean, seriously.
Some calls, brother. Make some calls. See if we can get Bud Selig on the phone and get these ideas in front of him. Maybe, Bill, you could change everything for everybody.
Thank you.
Get these ideas out there.
It's the most uptight sport, I think, that's ever existed. We still have this 104 list of steroid guys that five names have leaked out. We still don't know why those names leaked out. And now it's like, are more names going to come out? Is that it? Like, do I have to wake up every morning wondering if this is the day more Red Sox guys were on that list? Like, I just don't understand what's going on with this sport. But I know you work for the MLB Network, obviously. So give me three things that you love about the sport right now that you think are underrated.
Three things that I love about the sport of baseball.
That are underrated, in your opinion.
That are underrated. You've mentioned before how the games are really long, and that you got the Red Sox Yankees. I was there and those things average 3 hours or 45 minutes.
So you like that?
Yeah, that's outstanding. I love, though, that there's no clock. I love that you can go 3 hours and 45 minutes. I mean, I don't love that. I didn't love it as a player because it was an absolute nightmare. But I do love that there's no clock in baseball. And that's the one.
I can't imagine, like, playing first base and having to stand for that long. It would be like when you're at a cocktail party and you have to stand for 4 hours talking to people and your knees start to hurt. I would think that would happen if you play first base at a Red Sox-Yankee game.
Oh,
by the seventh inning, you're like, oh, my back hurts. Jesus, can we get this over?
Yeah, it's like when you go to an amusement park and you're walking around all day. You're like, oh, man, I didn't really do anything today, but boy, am I sore. That's kind of how it was with the Red Sox-Yankees, you know. You knew it was going to be 3 hours and 45 minutes.
Oh, great. It's another lefty-righty pitching change. I'm just going to stand here and rock back and forth for another 7 minutes. That would drive me crazy.
And sometimes, you know, Dice, you know, everyone knows about Dice sometimes. Would go, you know, 3-2, he'd have 120 pitches at the end of the fifth inning, and you're like, oh, man, who are we bringing in now? It's already 10:30.
You must have loved when Wake pitched, though, because that was like boom, boom, boom. Every inning lasted
great.
Like
get
a minute.
Get the ball, throw it. He was great. And he had that nasty knuckleball, too. Nobody was touching that thing.
I'm convinced that's why Mark Burley has been so successful. Because people watch Mark Burley and they're like, really? Perfect game? Like he doesn't have the stuff that you would associate with it, but he works so fast, his teammates are always in the game.
Oh, guys love playing behind guys that work fast. Get the ball, throw it. So that's the way. I think that's why Burley's had a lot of success in his career, because here it is, hit it if you can.
Well, what are the benefits to not working fast? That's the part I don't get. Like, do you really need 20 seconds to figure out what your next pitch is going to be? Just throw it.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a deal. Guys would just walk around the mound, and, you know, sometimes we face Steve Traxel in New York. I'm like, oh, come on, Trax, get on the mound. You know what I mean?
What are they thinking about? Are they walking around going, man, I wonder if a slider would be a good selection for my next pitch.
Yeah, or maybe a split finger here. I'm not sure.
I wonder what the batter is looking forward to.
Umpires are trying. The umpires have done a better job of trying to get that, you know, cleaned up a little bit, get guys on the mound.
You're in the National League, or you might not have even been in baseball yet, but the Red Sox used to have this guy named Jeff Gray, who was a reliever. And I'm not kidding. He was a minute per pitch. He'd get the ball, and it wasn't like he was walking around looking at things and thinking. Like, he would just stand there on the rubber, like just staring at the catcher. And people would be like going into comas in the crowd. Like, people would just be like, what is happening? 45-minute top of the seventh inning, but I can't. It's my all-time pet peeve, and that's why I love Wakefield, and I hope he keeps pitching until he's 60, because you can always count on the Wakefield games to go 2.5 hours or less, and that's it.
You can, and you can bet that Wake, throwing that knuckleball, can pitch as long as he wants to, as long as his wife Stacy will let him, really, because he could probably pitch 10, 12 more years.
Wait, you got to give me two more things that are underrated about the game that you love.
Two more things that are underrated. What comes to your mind?
Oh, you deflected the question. I would say that. I would say that the athleticism is making a slow comeback now that the guys aren't bulking up and just trying to hit homers every time. That's been interesting.
I definitely think the game has changed as far as in the last couple of years here. It's, you know, I think the the playing field has come down a little bit. I think you're seeing, you know, like you saw Ellis the other night, Jacoby Ellsbury, you know, steals his 70th bag. I think,
right.
You know, it's just good to see, like, yeah, I think there's a little more baseball going on, and guys just, you know, there's not so much slugfest going on as there was before. The thing I love about baseball is there's so many games within the game. Like, when you watch a game, like, when a guy gets a hit, all of a sudden the new game's base running. You know, that guy that's on base, you know, there's so many things you can watch about baseball. There's so many little games within the game of baseball. I think that's the one thing I love when you watch baseball. If you're truly a fan and you really appreciate what it's all about, you really appreciate all the cool things that go on in the game. And even how guys set up, even when you watch an infielder, or how he sets up when a batter, however a pitcher's pitching a certain hitter, you can watch a shortstop, you know, shade to the middle, shade to the right, you know, going back and forth of pitches. I just think there's so many. The one cool thing about baseball that I don't know if it's in that much in other sports is that there's so many little games within the ultimate game of baseball. And I love that about the sport.
And you just described why I love the baseball playoffs so much. And I think each year the disparity grows a little bit between how tense and how great the playoff games are versus how some of these regular season games are, because there's just so many more bad teams now. And, you know, and that's why the Red Sox-Yankee games, they really do, they go 4 hours, partly because they are playoff games. Every pitch means something. And each team's trying to outthink the other one. And that's what I'm looking forward to this month with the baseball players. But also I'm not looking forward to, because it's so freaking grueling as a fan. You know, it's like night after night of just having your insides ripped out. Like, it gets tough to take after a while.
It is grueling.
I'm getting old.
Yeah, it's win or go home. You know what I mean? Yeah, it's especially you being a Red Sox fan. That's like, do or die, you know, life or death, you know, in Boston.
Right.
So, you know, it's everything. And that's, it is so exciting, though, man. Like, when you come playoff time, you know, the greatest thing is you get some of those day games going, too. You come home. You know, come home from school or whatever, when you sit down and you watch a big playoff game, and you know, it's just the playoffs are, it's just the heightened level of people just loving being at the park, and so many people talking about it every day at work and things like that. It's just, I don't know. When I was going on the road to the World Series in 06, I had never, that was my first time in the postseason, and I had never experienced anything like it. And it was just playing in the Yankee Stadium that first round and feeling the energy that they had, and going back to Detroit and feeling the energy in that stadium, in the city, everywhere you went. If you go get a sandwich for lunch, I mean, everyone's so excited. It's just the postseason brings so many great feelings throughout the community and whatever city you're in.
Yeah, for the Red Sox fans, because we won in 04 and 07, I wouldn't say it's quite life or death like it was, because it's just not. Because I think, you know, 03 and earlier, it was just, every year you had that noose hanging over us that we just wanted to go away. I think that the thing that stayed the same is we just don't want to lose to the Yankees. I mean, that's that worst case scenario of a Yankees playoff series loss is still as bad as anything that happened pre 04. And, you know, I think we saw it last year with Tampa. Lost to Tampa. Man, that stunk. 3 hits in game 7. But at the same time, it wasn't. I wasn't like walking around like a zombie for the next 5 days. Whereas if that had happened to the Yankees, I would have been so freaking mad for so long. And that's, you know, that I really hope that it can be Yankees Red Sox again, just so we can get that kind of emotion, because the hatred is there.
No, it is. I think the Yankees Red Sox bring it during the regular season, but also in the postseason. Man, what an elevated,
totally.
So elevated against those guys. There's no other rival like that. No other rival.
And you know what's helped is that Girardi, I think, you know, because when Torrey was the manager, we used to, I'm going to use we with the Red Sox, I hope you don't mind. We used to just throw at Jeter constantly. It was like a sport to see who could hit Jeter on the wrist next. And Torrey, taking the classy approach, never really responded. Now, I think the Yankees are much more feisty. And, you know, I think that could be a part of a Red Sox-Yankees series in the post-Torrey era that wasn't a part of the pre-Torrey era, which is some feistiness and some bad blood that we haven't seen before.
Oh, I think so, too. I just feel like you look at this team now, the Yankees, I think one of the big reasons they've been so successful this year is that I really feel they got a personality. There's so many times you just feel like, those guys, you know, you hear people over and over say, man, it just feels like such a business atmosphere over there. Well, you, now you see, like, you know, the Nick Swisher, and you see, you know, A.J. Burnett and CeCe, and they just got some – I feel like they got such personality over there now. It kind of brought it out in everybody. Johnny Damon looks like he's back with the Red Sox again, you know, with that,
yeah,
you know, having fun. He's joking around and laughing so much. So I think that brought a big – I think you're exactly right, but that they have a different edge about them this year, you know, Teixeira, what he's doing. They almost have that kind of like a little bit of grittiness that you hadn't seen in past years.
Yeah, it seems CC was huge. Swisher was huge. I think Jabba, like when you just watch them from day to day, it seems like those are the three guys in the dugout who always have guys around them and they just seem happy and like they're setting the mood for the team. And then I also think, you know, what happened this year with A-Rod, where the thing that happened to him at the beginning of the year with the steroids and all that stuff, and he really took a step back and he stopped trying to be this global icon A-Rod and doing all these different things and hands in the middle. And now he just seems like a baseball player who has an actress girlfriend and we barely hear anything from him.
Yeah.
It's a good thing for that team.
No, it's a great thing for that thing. I think that's a big thing too. I think, you know, it looks like Alex just kind of just became one of the guys this season. You know, he just kind of like mixed in. Obviously, yeah, he had all the you know, the hip surgery and all that stuff and all the steroid stuff and all that. But, you know, it looks like when he came back, it wasn't really that big a deal. And he just kind of slid under the radar and he just hit 7 RBIs the other day at the end of the season with a couple homers to get the, you know, 100 RBIs again and 30 homers, and just kind of did it stealth. Yeah, I think that was, this is the perfect mix of team to kind of take, you know, put down his star status a little bit.
Would you say that played in at all with what happened with Jeter this year? Like almost like the hierarchy was reestablished. Jeter is the best Yankee again, and A-Rod is a supporting guy.
I would say so, yeah. If there was any year that was established again, I feel like this year, you know, you're talking about Jeter and the MVP talk all the time. Is he the MVP? And I think he kind of stepped back into, you know, hey, he's always Mr. Yankee. And he's always the face of that organization for the last, you know, so many years. And I think, yeah, it's almost like A-Rod might, you know, people could say he's one of the best players that ever played the game, but you don't really think about him on the Yankees because all you see is Jeter.
I like Jeter. I think, you know, he's out of all the Yankee guys over the years, I think he's been the one I've had the most respect for. He is not the MVP this year. He's had an awesome year, but I don't see how in any rational world is Joe Mauer not the MVP.
Oh, yeah, 364, what, 28-96?
As a catcher.
Yeah, and as a catcher. And he missed time. He missed the whole first month.
And then Morneau goes out of the lineup, and yet they still make a run at the Tigers. Like, it's not even a debate. This is ridiculous. Yeah. Joe Mauer. It has to be Joe Mauer.
I agree. I love Joe Mauer. I think what he's done this year is absolutely unbelievable. He keeps winning batting titles as a catcher. It's unbelievable.
Right. What would you say in the NL? Because I refuse to follow the National League because it's quadruple A.
Oh, man, I know. Well, I'll tell you what. I really believe – I think of Carpenter and Wainwright, I just feel like the Cardinals have a good shot of.
No, I'm saying, who do you think the MVP was?
Oh, the MVP, Pujols.
Okay.
When you say?
Yeah, it's quadruple A. I don't pay attention.
Pretty nice numbers too, though.
You know, you should have come back and played for one of these crappy NL teams. You could have hit like 20 homers and batted fifth. Seriously, you would need to stay in shape. You could have eaten whatever you wanted during the days. You could have still had a good last year.
Yeah, you're right. Maybe I should have.
You
should come back next year.
You could have hit right behind Adrian Gonzalez in the Padres lineup. You could have had like 80 RBI.
Well, I'll tell you what, man. If you put some of those big guns, though, Fielder and Pujols and Howard in the American League, I think they would still probably do some big time damage.
True. There's a couple good NL teams.
Yeah.
Couple. Pitcher you could see putting the postseason on his back.
I would have to go with CeCe.
He was on my fantasy team. He was quietly a monster, except for his very last start. But last 4 months,
money. I feel like he just went out and dominated people.
Yeah.
And you think about putting somebody on their back. I mean, I think he might be able to do it, how big he is. He can probably throw a couple guys on his back and run around the track a little bit. So I think he's a guy, man. If he could get over some of, you know, struggling in the postseason and come out and dominate from game one, I think he could carry that team.
Now, he's never really had any playoff success whatsoever. That's a good sign for Red Sox
fans.
That's what
I'm saying. I just feel like he is that legit, though, that if he, you know, if he can get over the fact that, you know, he's struggled in the playoffs before and go out and have a dominant start, I just feel like, man, he'll be a tough guy to beat.
I would pick Verlander if he hadn't thrown so many innings this year. So I'm looking at it right now. He's thrown 240. Like, that's a guy who could get hot for 3 weeks and just nobody would be able to hit. But he'd have to start at least five more times. That puts him at, like, that would be like 35, 40 more innings. Now you're in the high 270s. I don't know.
That's a lot of innings. I've seen it firsthand. I mean, Verlander can flat out shut people down when he does that, you know, nice and easy. Wham! There's 100
right.
for you. There's a nasty curveball, changeup. Verly has that kind of stuff to just flat out shut people down.
The interesting guy is Lester, because he's only at 203. And he, you know, he does have that ability to just get hot. And so, obviously, same for Beckett. He's done it before. And I'm trying to think, is there
Johnny
anybody
Lester,
else?
Johnny Lester is one of those guys, I don't feel like he's talked about enough as one of the better pitchers in baseball. I mean, this guy has got dominant stuff. I mean, he's got a great cutter, sinker. I mean, he's got all great pitches. He's, you know, he's a big dude. He wants the ball when he goes out there every fifth day. I just feel like sometimes he kind of gets, not overlooked, but like when you talk about the best players and pitchers in the game, sometimes I think Lester gets, you know, not mentioned enough.
If Dice shows up for this playoffs, are the Red Sox, in your opinion, a better bet than the Yankees?
I still think the Red Sox are going to win it. I really?
Really?
I do.
Thank you.
Yeah, I do. I do. I think the Red Sox are going to win it. I just feel like their rotation, you know, you're right. If Dice K can come back and be Dice K, and because he can go out and shut you down one night. I mean, he'll just throw all. He has like 28 pitches, and he'll throw them all, and he'll somehow, you know, dominate somebody. But I just feel like their rotation, I feel like their back end of the bullpen, their bullpen's legit. You know, obviously Pap closing it out, but I just feel like that lineup, you know, gets hot, and then, you know, come game one, that's a they're throwing some thunder at you every night.
Do we have two setup guys that you trust?
Yeah, well, I think Billy Wagner's legit.
I agree.
I think Wags is legit out there. I know Manny's, you know, Del Carmen has struggled a little bit in the last, you know, few weeks here.
Same for Ramon Ramirez. I just don't trust.
Yeah,
his stats haven't been terrible, but I think Bard is the guy.
I was just going to say Daniel Bard throws like 108.
Yeah, the problem is he had that damaging Yankee series a few weeks back when he got touched up in two of the games, and his confidence was just soaring at that point. That was, you know, it was a legitimate debate at the time. Like, wow, could this guy be our closer next year? Like, do we trade Papelbon? And then the Yankees kind of crashed him back to earth a little bit.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, you know, if the Red Sox win the playoffs, he's going to have to come through. And I don't know if I trust him.
Yeah, I think with that kind of stuff, I mean, geez, he's got such electric stuff that, I mean, he can go flat out just come in and shut you down. So,
favorite playoff bullpen.
Well, you might have to go with, you know, the Dodgers have a pretty legit bullpen up there with, you know, Sherrill coming over in that trade. Brock,
yeah,
the back end. They've been the best bullpen out there all year long. So they're pretty impressive.
And you're going to put the Phillies last? I'm guessing.
Yeah, wait, what do you think about Jabba maybe going to the bullpen?
It's interesting. I've watched him both ways, and it feels different when he's coming out of the bullpen.
Yeah, I agree. I just feel
I don't know what it is.
He lets it rip out of the bullpen a little bit.
Yeah. I've been watching the Dodgers just because they're on late. You know, I'm on the West Coast, and they're on later, and Vin Scully does the games, and it's just a different experience when it's Vin Scully. You know, it's almost like relaxing. Like, you can read a book and, you know, play with your kids. Vin Scully's on in the background. It's like putting on classical music. But, you know, Manny was this elephant in the room with the Dodgers ever since he came back from the suspension. And all the diehard Dodger fans, I know a couple of them, just terrified of what he was going to do in the playoffs in a bad way. Cause they just felt like he was this albatross. You can't move him down the lineup. Friday night was probably his worst game of the year. And then Saturday, all of a sudden, so I watched that whole game. Goes to right field first time. Goes to right field second time. And that's usually the sign with Manny when he's getting going, is he starts going opposite field, right center. And he was hitting line drives. And now I'm thinking, hot damn, Manny could just get hot for this entire playoffs.
Oh, And carry the and yeah. carry the Dodgers.
Because they've been waiting for it for 3 months and it hasn't happened. But I'm telling you, this was the sign on Saturday night when he starts going opposite field.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. He lets that ball travel real good, rocks to the right, kind of sets up his swing to pull.
Yeah. He just – it's something – when he has bad habits, he's usually trying to jack everything in the left field. And he's – but when he's kind of getting in the zone – he just gets – there's this patience that you can just see. He's just waiting on it, and he takes it wherever it goes. And if he gets going, I think that's the team that comes out of the NL.
Yeah. Well, you look at that lineup, too. Kemp is so legit, obviously. And Ethier has been, you know, big all year long. Casey Blake. They got some baseball players over there, too, that, you know, that are gamers that Joe Torre loves. That's why you gotta love them. But, man, I don't know, man. The Cardinals are good. I feel like Carpenter and Wainwright have just dominant stuff, and I think like they've faced the Dodgers over in the last 30 innings. They've only given up 5 runs.
So you're going. Sounds like you're leaning toward Red Sox Cardinals.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking it's gonna be Red Sox Cardinals, but
I'm gonna say this. I'm very concerned for the Angels Red Sox series because everybody is now just penciling in the Red Sox against the Angels. Oh yeah, they always beat the Angels, and that's it. They just move on to the next thought, and at some point, the Angels are just going to win 3 games out of 5 against the Red Sox. This isn't going to go on for the rest of our lives, right?
No, I mean, at some point they will. But I, you know what? I know that those, you know, Terry Francona and all the fellas in the Boston Red Sox clubhouse are not taking those guys lightly. They know how good that team is, and what, you know, obviously they got Kendrick Morales has such a big year, and Hunter and Abreu. And they obviously have they're a different ball club than last year, but. The Red Sox know they're in. They got their hands full in this 5-game series against the Angels. So they're not going to take them lightly.
It does seem that the Angels can be pitched to.
Yeah, they can be pitched to. And what's going to be interesting too to see if Lackey and Weaver are enough at the top of that rotation,
right,
to beat Boston. I think that's going to be the X factor.
Well, what's going to really make me mad is if Kazmir pitches well, because they basically went to the 99-cent store and bought him.
He's like,
here, Tampa, here's 99 cents. For a $10 bill, take it.
Beat the Red Sox for us.
Yeah, and this is a guy who, when he's going, has caused some real trouble with the Red Sox. Now, we've hit him, too, but when he's on his game, it's a bad matchup, and I think the Red Sox are a little susceptible to lefties anyway. So that part worries me. Game 3, if that's how it shakes out. Game 3, Kazmir, Fenway. I don't know.
And Kazmir looks like he's got, you know, if you watch some of his starts, he looks like he's getting that fastball back. And he's, you know, he looks like since he's gone over to Anaheim, you know, he's pitched pretty well.
Well, it's kind of a kick in the ass to get traded, right? I mean, it's almost insulting
It's a motivator. It's a motivator. I mean, you're like, all right, they don't want me, but they want me. I'm fired up. You want me, and we're right in the middle of a race. This is great. You know, what better time to step up my game than now?
All right, make me one crazy prediction for the 2009 baseball playoffs.
One crazy prediction.
One crazy prediction.
One crazy prediction is going to be. I mean, is this something that I'm saying Red Sox Cardinals, but let me see. The Yankees lose first round.
Wow, you think they're that susceptible, huh?
Well. I think, you know, I think you can't take, whoever they're going to play first round, you can't take either of those teams lightly. And the Yankees are so heavily favored, so favored to walk in and, you know, win the whole thing. And, you know, like we were talking about before, CeCe hasn't proved himself yet in the postseason. So this will be the first year he tries to do that, and maybe they don't get out of the first round.
All right, that was pretty good. I was hoping you'd say something like, Jed Lowry will have an unassisted triple play. That would have been crazy.
Yeah, I was trying to think of something creative. I couldn't think of Jed Lowry. I like that. I like that.
All right, so all through October, you're going to be on MLB Tonight on MLB Network, pregame, postgame shows, highlights, analysis, press conferences throughout the postseason.
Yeah, throughout the postseason. It's going to be we feel like it's going to be a cool place to be, MLB Network, because we've got pregame, postgame, some interviews to do, and you know, we'll really be able to bring the fan everything they need baseball wise come postseason time.
And how many days a week are you doing?
So I'm doing all next week, and then so I do 4 days next week, and then I come back right around World Series time.
Okay. And you guys are going to have a lot of coffee on hand for these Yankees-Red Sox games.
Oh, yeah, big time. There's going to be pots everywhere. As soon as we go to commercial, I'll be like, give me a pot over here.
Yeah, it's 2:30 a.m. Here we are on the MLB Network. The Yankees-Red Sox game just ended. We're going to go over. The game lasted 6 hours and 48 minutes, and Sean Casey is asleep in a sleeping bag.
He's getting a quick cat nap at the corner.
All right, will you come on before the World Series?
Yeah, I'd love to. Love to.
Well, you have to because you're the mayor of the BS Report.
Oh, man, I love the BS Report. I love being the mayor of the BS Report. I'm definitely coming on.
All right, Sean Casey, thanks for being the Subway Fresh Take Hotline.
All right, thanks, Bill.
And now, the phone call that you've been waiting for, America's been waiting for, the world's been waiting for. The pre-playoffs call with Jacko.
Complex Litigation, this is John.
Oh, Johnny!
Well, there you are, postseason edition.
I just had Sean Casey on, who you're following.
The mayor.
The BS Report. His crazy prediction for the playoffs was the Yankees going down in round one.
Really? Well, it's not beyond the realm of possibility. Of course, he's a former Red Sox, so I take that with a humongous grain of salt.
Yeah, you probably should. We're taping this on a Monday.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, we're running this on a Wednesday, so you will not know who your first-round opponent is. I'm guessing you're not worried either way.
No, I hope that game Tuesday night goes about 27 innings. That would be ideal. The longer, the better, and wear out that pitching staff, and everybody gets drained. Let's hope so. The other part of me worries about the Twins and, team with destiny type deal, when you're down three games with four to play, and then you roll into the playoffs. You know, you're playing with house money, and those teams are dangerous. You know, destiny's darlings. That makes me a little nervous.
And Ron Gardner are going, when Justin Morneau died, a part of me died too. But now you're the one.
Exactly. Yeah, if he was healthy and it was him and Maurer, I'd be really nervous. Because every time, I know the Yankees were 7-0 against them this year, but every time they played, I was like, oh my God, those two guys are deadly.
He's definitely, there's no possible way he can come back, right?
Hope not. Yeah. No offense to Justin Morneau, but I certainly hope there's no way he can come back for the postseason.
So, John, Joe Mead had the excellent suggestion that we should record this podcast two ways.
Absolutely. Alternate endings.
This is good. We'll have a deleted scene of whoever loses. So let's go. Yankees, Twins. How are you feeling about this series?
Well, what worries me there is that the Yankees have beaten them seven out of seven this season.
Yeah.
Just the law of averages says that they're due to win sometime. You would hate to have them win in the postseason. Plus, I'm deadly afraid of the whole, we're the team of destiny when you get on a roll like that. Sometimes there's no stopping those teams. That makes me very nervous. On the other hand, I'm very excited to have the possibility of facing Carl Pavano.
I forgot about that.
Even though he shut the Yankees down when he pitched against them this season, they eventually won the game, but he pitched brilliantly.
They're not paying him. I mean, that contract's over. They're not paying him to play for the Twins, right?
Thank God, no. They're done. But what amazed me was he pitched on 3 days rest on Sunday.
I know.
He couldn't pitch on 400 days rest for the Yankees, but he could pitch on 3 days rest for the Twins. It's freaking outrageous.
I'm telling you, if I was a baseball GM, I would go after all the guys who have failed in New York and Boston. Because it seems like 50% of those time, those guys just go somewhere else and they're fine.
Yeah, they've made all their money, so they're really not playing for anything, you know? They just go be loose out there, no pressure.
No pressure, and they're just happy to be on a team where there's not 100 reporters in the clubhouse and all that stuff, and it's like a good thing.
They're not getting mocked on the back page of some tabloid, be it the Boston Herald or the New York Post or the New York Daily News. Yeah, they're happy about that, absolutely. Good call.
The Twins have two things, actually three things. The Maurer, obviously, the 2009 AL MVP, Jeter can go to hell. The Metrodome is always a little weird.
Yeah,
just a little
exactly.
Weird to go in there. It's the weird sight lines. It just feels strange.
Remember the 91 World Series when they would have like that decibel meter and it would be like it was louder than the sound of a 747 engine or something?
Yeah.
I'd hate to see that come up on TBS in a playoff series.
Yeah, that wouldn't be good. And then the number three, obviously, Joe Nathan.
Right.
A good closer. A closer that if you're down 4-3 in the ninth inning, you're not scoring.
They have a couple of scrappy guys, too. Like, the thought of, we'll just put up four fingers and walk Maurer every time he's up is appealing, and that's probably what they would do. But they got some scrappy guys like Kadire and some other guys that you're like, they'll come through. Plus, they have don't they have Orlando Cabrera on the team now?
OC,
Oh, God, that makes me nervous.
He lives to play for the against the Yanks.
Still 2004 karma there. That bothers me a lot now.
For opposing managers, who brings you more comedy, Jim Leland or Ron Gardenhire?
Well, Ron Gardenhire is kind of nondescript, and the Yankees have owned the Twins in recent history. but
Ron Gardner, wait a second. I beg to differ with the Ron Gardner thing.
You don't think he's nondescript?
This is a guy who I once wrote looks like he should be sitting in the dugout with a wife beater on scratching out a Powerball ticket.
Don't you say I wouldn't call him nondescript. Brad Childress, there must be something about being a manager or coach in Minnesota.
Brad Childress is like, with that Ron Gardner analogy, he's the Ron Gardner's black sheep brother in that analogy.
Really?
Yeah, he's the brother that Ron Gardner is ashamed of, even as he's scratching the Powerball tickets with his wife beat around. So, yeah. I love Leland, and it's always great when your team plays Leland because he just has cigarettes on his mind constantly, and he's either sneaking back from the dugout or sneaking out.
Yeah, I mean, I would love to have Leland manage my team. He's, you know, he's off there smoking a butt, and he looks just like – he's just a baseball lifer, you know. He's gone. He's got that mustache, the cigarettes. I mean, you know he swears like a sailor. There's no question.
Oh, totally. You know he's naked a lot, too. You know he's constantly naked in the locker room, just walking around with his
– walking around naked with a cigarette butt dangling from his lips, just cursing the blue streak.
Do you think smoking in the dugout should have been grandfather clause in for
anybody
who was in baseball before 1970 or something?
Absolutely. He should openly smoke cigarettes. You can openly chew tobacco. What's the difference, really?
Because I'm reading this book about the stand-up comedy scene in the late 70s.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually really good. You'd like it. It's called I'm Dying Up Here. But one of the things was about Richard Lewis, the first time he was on The Tonight Show. He ended up getting bumped, or his routine got cut a little bit short because George Peppard and Johnny Carson were smoking cigarettes and talking about what kind of cancer they might get or something on the show, which made me think, like, remember the days when on talk shows, like, the host and the guest had cigarettes?
Yeah, they would have, like, Carson used to have an ashtray, like, on the desk with him, I think.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, it's a different time. How about when you could smoke on planes?
Yeah, that wasn't...
Like, there was a Mad Men episode the first one of the season when they flew to, I think they flew to Baltimore, or I think it was Baltimore, and they were on a plane, and there was, like, you know, open cigarette smoking.
Yeah. Midnight Run, which only came out 20 years ago, has some public smoking that is kind of jarring now when you watch it.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, it's weird now to think about that, yeah.
But,
you can't even smoke, like, outside of your house now.
No.
In your own house or, like, in your own backyard, the police come and arrest you, I think.
Helicopters that come overhead.
Yeah.
Now, how do you feel about the Red Sox Angels?
Well, the Red Sox own the Angels, and until the Angels prove differently, I'm never going to believe in them. I'm just never going to believe in them. I think the Red Sox have their number. Now, again, as I mentioned earlier, the law of averages, you think it would have to catch up with them at some point, and they would come through. But I just don't think they're going to do it. The Red Sox always... As much as I will root against them with every fiber of my being, they're going to beat the Angels.
I'm worried about a couple of things. One is that everybody thinks we're going to beat the Angels because we always do. That's never a good approach because every season's different.
Right.
And I'm not making light of this at all. The Nick Adenhart thing.
Yeah, they got a little destiny on their side too.
Yeah, there's something when stuff like that happens and the team has that common thread that's, you know, we're going to do this for whoever. It just seems like... That's an added something for October baseball.
Yesterday
it's indefinable.
Yesterday evening, I was watching some baseball tonight. It was yesterday evening or yesterday afternoon. I was watching a Baseball Tonight special edition when they had this montage of great scenes from during the season, and they had all the celebrations when teams clinched. And when all the Angels went out to the outfield to the Nick Adenhart Memorial there.
It got a little dusty.
Got a little misty in my house. I'm not going to lie to you. That was freaking like, oh, my God. If that doesn't give you chills, then you should stop watching sports. Or you're not human. I'm not sure which.
They did a nice job the whole season of keeping his memory going in a whole different variety of ways. And it was obvious that they really, you know, it wasn't one of those things where the guy died and they're after the fact like, oh, yeah, the guy's dead. Let's.
Right.
Yeah, it was like they obviously really liked him.
Yeah.
And
like drenching the jersey and all that. And I know that got, you know, all the people that always get apoplectic about slightly politically incorrect things got apoplectic about that because
that
he was killed
stupid.
By a drunk driver. But
that was stupid.
What else are they going to do to celebrate? And like to include
it in
the celebration was fantastic, you know?
I thought that was great.
Typical people that need something to whine about.
Yeah.
Right on cue, whined about it.
So what worries me, talking objectively about this series, is... The Angels are not the kind of team with that extra thing going that are just going to say, let's quit. We're down 2-0.
Yeah.
Screw it. Like, it really seems like they have some common resolve because of what happened to him. And, I think they're going to be a tough out. And also, you know, they've had home field. I think at least two other times against us.
Yeah.
And then the A's, the same thing in 2004 or 2003. I'm sorry. You know, one of these times we're going to have to go back to the game five for a
back
West Coast
there.
Game. Yeah. Cause even in 03 when we played the A's, yeah, it was a tough game. It certainly wasn't went through the emotional ringer. That was the one that ended with Derek Lowe doing the crotch chop. But I mean, that game, I wrote a whole 3,500 word column about that game.
The thing that's good for the Red Sox is Jason Varitek probably is not going to be involved a great deal.
Yeah.
So the Angels can't just circle the bases like they're running a marathon openly.
Do you think they should wear a black arm patch during the playoffs for his career?
They really should.
Or at least honor him before one of the games?
I wish he'd just come out right now and say, by the way, I'll be taking that $3 million player option for next season because there's not a doubt in my mind he's going to do it. So let's just cut the suspense and sign it right now.
I hate talking negatively of anyone responsible for what happened in 04. But I don't think I've ever watched a worse baseball player than him the last, like, 4 months.
Yeah, he's brutal.
It's the triple crown of just doing everything wrong. They can't hit, can't throw anybody out.
And Red Sox fanboys, in the last several years of his declining skills offensively, they were like, well, he's still so good defensively.
Yeah.
No. I could steal a couple bases against Jason Varitek right now.
Just whiffed on strikeouts with his mitt. Then it was like, well, he calls a great game.
Right.
Then Victor Martinez shows up, and there's immediately no difference at all. And if anything, a couple of pitchers have pitched better with Martinez.
Exactly.
So there's really nothing left at all.
He's got nothing left.
And meanwhile, the Martinez trade, which I thought was a borderline heist at the time. I did like Hagedorn a lot as a prospect, like Masterson, but I still think they should have gotten Buchholz or given away a guy who makes $7 million a year next year.
Right.
And that trade has been, for a variety of reasons, a big help.
Yeah, it's been huge. And Theo made two good moves. That was a great move, which saved your season. And he went out and got Alex Gonzalez, which stabilized your shortstop position, which has been quietly enormous for you.
I thought you were going to say Wagner. No, I think Wagner. I think he's done three good things because I really like Wagner, too. I think he's going to – I know some people are like, he's Billy Wagner. But the guy's pitching eighth innings.
I'll believe the Wagner thing when I see it in a crucial position.
But we didn't have anybody else.
You have Okajima. You had an eighth inning guy. You had Okajima.
Not somebody to come in and throw 100 against a lefty batter, 96.
Well, not throwing 100, but I mean, he didn't look that great against the Yanks last weekend in his 32 pitches and gave up a handful of runs.
Yeah, I don't know why I'm so afraid of Okajima because he's actually pitched well this season, but there's something hangdoggy about him that worries me.
He was solid for you in the postseason a couple of years ago.
He was in 07.
07, yeah. I mean, your starting pitching is an enigma. You don't know what you're going to get. I mean, Lester should be solid. Beckett, who knows? Buchholz has been a little shaky his last two outings. And the National Treasure, you don't know what you're going to get out of him.
We need the National Treasure. I think the playoff hopes are pinned to either the National Treasure or Buchholz stepping it up.
Yeah, definitely.
Which makes me nervous.
Right. And from a Yankee standpoint, I mean, we're counting on A.J. Burnett. And Sabathia has been his career, he's been terrible in the postseason. And on Friday night, with a chance to get his 20th win, he was hideous against the Rays. He didn't last into the third inning. Now you wonder if he's too amped up and he's going to be amped up like that in the postseason and he's going to be brutal. Not to mention that Sports Illustrated, I may cancel my subscription after they put Mariano Rivera on the cover.
Oh, God bless them for that.
Oh, my
that
God.
Great.
Last Wednesday, I got home from work and got my Sports Illustrated in the mailbox, and I almost had a stroke when I saw him on the cover.
It's funny to read all these Rivera articles because there's been a lot of them this year by a lot of different people, really good writers. None of them are interesting. I mean, there's a guy who it is impossible to write a good magazine feature about.
Because there's no angle to it.
There's no angle.
He's just like a religious, quiet guy. He pitches. Like, I love the fact that he showed Roy Halladay how to throw the cutter and like show it to anybody. You know?
Yeah. Hey, Roy, have you ever tried this? The Yankee hitter's just like, really?
Yeah, exactly.
Really, Mariano?
Yeah.
I
thought that Sports Illustrated one was interesting that he didn't intentionally try to develop a cutter. He was just playing catch one day and he couldn't throw the ball straight.
That was the best one I've read. And even that one after about – and Tom Verducci is my favorite writer that they have. And even about midway through that one, I started skimming. Because it's like, yeah, he's a religious guy who learned how to throw a cutter. And he's been awesome. And
And amazing, the Yankee brain trust, of course, worked on him for weeks to try and fix him so he wouldn't throw the ball that way anymore.
Right.
Well done, fellas.
Touched by God.
Exactly. God gave him that gift.
I will say that it is amazing that he is older than me and still doing this. Because I have trouble getting out of bed.
And he's like, the guy's pretty much, knock on wood, been rock solid with only one pitch. Mm. That was the article thing, one man, one pitch. I mean, that's pretty unbelievable.
It's never really been explained why people just don't swing, ever.
And to forswear the 400 emails you're going to get of people talking about how I lambasted him in April.
Yeah.
That was in April, and it was a moment of anger. Let's just move on. I'm not here to talk about the past.
Hey, you're talking to a guy who, after the 15-inning loss, wrote off this season the next seven. The thing you have to understand is if you're a passionate person, the baseball season is really not meant for you, the 162 games.
Exactly. No, it's not. It's
I am a high and low type guy, and when they lost that 15-inning game, I was so mad, and it ruined my whole night. I was on a date with my wife, and it made me just so angry, and I just – it really affected the rest of the season for me. I had trouble watching the games.
Yeah, that had to be a tough one. It was a tough one for me to watch, and the Yankees won. That's why I vehemently, with everything I have, do not want a Yankees-Red Sox ALCS. Yeah. I don't think I can take it. I really don't.
Well, I don't know if America could take it either, because between these two teams now
– yeah.
I mean, we had high OBPs in 04. This is a whole other stratosphere.
Yeah.
This is going to be – when you talk about pitch counts, every at-bat is seven pitches with both lineups. I just think this could – Sean Casey's doing these before and after postseason shows on MLB Network. I was saying, you better have coffee.
Right.
You better have coffee. Coffee pots brewing at about 12:30 a.m.
At least for you, you're out on the West Coast, so it's a little bit different. You're not up till 12:30 in the morning every night. You're up till 9:30, and then you can still go on with your life. I have to get up the next day to go to work. It's a freaking horror show.
You know what I was thinking? Let's say Red Sox Yankees ALCS, and these games are all going to go 5 hours. Do we really need just two announcers? Couldn't they shuttle more announcers in? Give McCarver a two-inning breather?
When Gaddafi gave the speech at the United Nations that went on so long that his original translator allegedly collapsed or something. And they had to bring in another translator from the UN bullpen to keep going.
Joe Buck would say, all right, it's 10:30 here in the East Coast. It's the fourth inning. Tim McCarver went outside to stretch his legs and get some food. Let's bring in Sean Casey. They need to do that. Nobody could listen to Buck and McCarver for 5.5 hours a night.
No, God, no. No.
Or anybody. No, I don't know. People couldn't listen to us for 5.5 hours. You can't have the same two announcers.
No, you've got to mix it up a little bit. There's only so much you can say. Same analysis over and over again. Bring in a new perspective.
Well, maybe they'll have a three-man booth. At least in a three-man booth, there's three people talking, which is more interesting than two if you're sitting there for 5.5 hours. I'm against three-man booths normally, but I don't know, Johnny. My insides, I don't know if you turned 40 this last month. I don't know if my insides are prepared for this.
You can't hear it, right? Baseball postseason is a tough one. It's just, there's no clock, and games can go forever, and just you live and die on every pitch. Especially Yankees, Red Sox, there's just so much on the line. God, they have to lose to the Angels. Please, just let them lose to the Angels.
Anyone in the National League you're afraid of?
The Cardinals would make you a little nervous just because of Pujols, but nobody else really, no. The Phillies their bullpen is an atrocity, and their starting pitching's not that great. The Dodgers have, limped to the finish. The Rockies I know nothing about. I know they have Troy Tulowitzki. I literally couldn't tell you anything else about them.
What about Clint Barnes?
Sure, whatever. I don't know.
You know who's on the Rockies? I was watching them this weekend because I was watching the Dodgers-Rockies series. Everybody was going crazy out here about the Dodgers possibly collapsing. They have Jose Contreras on their team.
Do they really?
Yeah. They dragged him out for some eighth inning at bat, and it was they had to use a wheelbarrow to get him to the mound. He's 1,000 years old.
I actually remember that now. I remember, and they have Giambi on the Rockies, too.
Oh, yeah.
I forget the Giambi now.
The National League, where American League stars go to die.
Jose Contreras, wasn't he 1-5 or 0-5 with the White Sox? Or maybe it was even worse than that. He had an abysmal record. Maybe his ERA was 5, and he was 0-8.
You know who plays right field for the Rockies?
No.
Hal McCray.
Come on.
No, seriously, he's 58 years old. He's the right fielder.
I was thinking of Hal McCray, really. It's good to see him back in the game.
Griffey, really, what was he thinking going back to Seattle? He could have gone six more years in the NL.
Well, like there's still time.
He should go to the Padres. He could hit 800 homers for the Padres. He'd bat fifth. He'd hit 220 and have 29 homers a year.
Yeah, maybe he'll sign with them in the offseason. Plenty of time for that.
I just have I would pick Red Sox Dodgers at gunpoint, but it would be if it was Red Sox Cardinals, which Sean Casey predicted, and having all those old Red Sox guys or people who have.
You know, last time we talked about this, weird. I didn't even remember that John Smoltz is a member of the Cardinals too. Two old friends, Julio Lugo and John Smoltz, in that game.
Oh yeah, and we went against them in 04.
Yeah. Maybe you can go the same route like 04. You can beat the Angels and then beat the Yankees and then beat the Cardinals.
Matt Holliday, our 2010 left fielder, he's on that team.
You think you're going to sign him and not Jason Bay?
I don't know if we're bringing back J.B. Smoove.
Holliday, isn't he represented by Boris, though, and they have a bad relationship with Boris now because of the Teixeira thing? I don't know who represents Jason Bay.
I don't either. It's probably some random Canadian
guy. Canadian E. It's a good organization beside Jason Bay, yeah?
He represents Jason Bay and two of the Mighty Ducks. So there's three clients. Now, I don't know if they're going to bring back. I had a reader say that Jason Bay needs a nickname and suggested J.B. Smoove, which is the guy who plays Leon on Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Kind of like that, the J.B. Smoove for Jason Bay.
There you go.
Could be good.
That'll work.
You want to talk about Francesa lashing out at me?
I know. It was upsetting on Friday. I was like, Rodney King, can't we all just get along?
It was like if your dad had attacked me.
That's exactly right. That's sort of what it felt like. I read about it on a website, but I couldn't link to the YouTube link that it went to where he initially lashed out at you, so I kind of missed that part. But then
he's very upset.
I was driving, and then I saw your Twitter responses.
Yeah.
And you played the Parcells card, which is like, you know, dagger for
just having fun with it. Well, it's tough to be called a fraud by somebody who did a food commercial with Bill Parcells. We were supposed to be covering him.
No, I don't want to like throw him under the bus.
I love him. The guy's been our guy for 20 years. That's why this hurts so much.
Now I'm doing him. I like Francis. I like him. I like Inch. but
here's the issue. He needs to get back together with Dog.
Yeah, it'll help them both out.
They need each other.
Absolutely.
And I think Mike's gotten a lot more crusty since Dog left.
Yeah, definitely.
Dog, I'm not even sure if he's in the United States anymore. Does he still have a show?
The last I heard of him was when he was firing people on the air and talking about how awful his own created station was. So I haven't heard about him since then. I don't know what's going on with him.
I mean, can't they just get back together?
Yes, they really should.
Can't America just vote and say, hey, let's get these guys back together? This
who can be like the... Remember there was a thing where like Frank Sinatra brought back Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis together at some Jerry Lewis telethon?
Yeah. You know, maybe Parcells will be the guy.
In 25 years or something. That's what they need to do. Parcells needs to be the Frank Sinatra and bring them back together.
Well, anyway, I have a great deal of respect for him. He's been a radio, probably, you know, one of the two co-hosts of my favorite radio show ever, hands down.
We went to the Jersey Shore in 1993 and talked like him for seven straight days. Come on.
Yeah. We've told that story. Right. We've told that story.
Absolutely. But, I mean, this shows the devotion.
Hey, Doc, that girl has huge cans.
Yeah, I'm not killing him, Mike.
That killed that push-up bra, Mike.
Great job by that bikini.
Yeah. So, anyway, it's a sad day. I'm sorry. You know, I'm sorry you're in the middle of it. You love us both.
I do. It was painful. It was painful driving home and listening to that. I was driving through my tears.
Like Last American Virgin. Oh, too dated. Adventureland? Yeah. It's a little more hip. There's a crying driving scene in Adventureland. I recommend that, by the way.
All right.
Yeah. No, it's good.
I'll check that out.
It's for people in our age range.
All right.
Yeah. All right, Johnny. So,
right.
How are you feeling heading into the playoffs?
I'm not going to lie to you. I'm nervous. Game one is of crucial importance. The Yankees absolutely positively have to win game one or they're going to go down in flames in the first round.
Okay.
I'm nervous about the whole thing. I wish I could say I was excited about the playoffs. I am a little bit excited, but I'm more nervous than anything because if they flame out this year and they don't at least go to the World Series after having spent $500 million in the offseason getting Sabathia, Burnett, and Teixeira, like I don't know where they go from here. Essentially, if they don't win the World Series this year, like what's the plan for next year? What do they do?
Is there anybody coming off the roster that makes a lot of money?
Well, I mean, I potentially Damon and Matsui, but I think they'd be smart to re-sign Damon. They're probably not going to re-sign Matsui, but, I mean, there's no great free agents out there if they flame out this postseason. I mean, if they flame out now, there's nobody out there.
Hmm.
I don't know what the plan is then. What's the plan then?
If they let Matsui go and he signs with another team, that means his porn collection might go online, right?
He
can't transport that. It's illegal.
Might be hard for him to move it. So yeah,
you can't transport it. You got to like somehow get rid of at least some of it.
I'm pretty sure they're not. He had a fairly decent year, but I'm pretty sure they're not going to re-sign Matsui. Because what I heard is like next year, what they want to do is use the DH role, not have like a full-time DH, but use it as a way to give guys a rest. Like, you know, DH Jeter, DH A-Rod, and, you know, DH whoever else they have in their lineup occasionally,
right.
Posada, so they get sort of a day off without having really a day off getting their bat out of the lineup.
What did you think of Seth Meyers' joke on SNL that when he said that Kate Hudson is pregnant, it would be the first time that A-Rod's produced in October?
I did not see that. I did not see Saturday Night Live. But
okay.
That's a good one. Yeah, that's true, too. I mean,
any defense?
Any defense?
Yeah.
No, God, no. That's the problem. He hasn't produced in October. Hopefully now the new A-Rod, under the radar, 7 RBIs yesterday. Maybe he can. Maybe this is his year. He doesn't have to be the man. They have Teixeira to be the man, so he can just be the sidekick. Maybe he'll produce.
All right, Johnny.
That was a long answer, but let's just put it this way. I'm nervous about the playoffs.
I got to say, I sense an edge in your voice that I haven't heard in a long time. You're very confident this year. Now there's a little edge.
It's been 9 years since they won the World Series. I mean, these playoffs have disappointed me for 9 years now. So, you know, it's hard for me to get fired up.
Are we going to be seeing your Yankee playoff thoughts on Twitter at all or no?
Oh, God, yeah. I'm sure I'll tweet. And there'll probably be expletive-laden, I would say, and probably a lot of fatalistic, melancholy posts. But
all right, try to keep
it relatively. Followed by some rejoicing.
Try to keep it relatively clean.
I'll see what I can do.
It's Jacko, at Jacko2323, your Twitter.
Exactly, yes.
Okay. All right, Johnny.
All right, buddy.
We will call you either end of this week or early next week
to discuss
the 2009 baseball playoffs. Jacko in the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Joe Mead, let's hear it. Special playoff edition, Johnny.
Nice. Theocracy.
Bill, Jacko, partners in crime. The Subway Fresh Take Hotline.
See, Francesa doesn't have that.
No. Theocracy, baby.
All right, Johnny.
All right, buddy.
Bye-bye.
Hang in there.
Whoa.
Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at PodCenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.
You laughed. You cried. You turned up the sound repeatedly, and now it's all over. Thus concludes another installment of the BS Report. And with all this talk about sports, Bill Simmons neglected to mention this important just breaking news. The $5 footlong anthem rolls on with Subway Everyday Value. So many of your Subway favorites are $5 footlongs, like the Tastetacular Spicy Italian $5 footlong and the Pile Ridiculously High BLT $5 footlong, both made to your order on the freshly baked bread of your choice.